I'm Carrie Fountain, and this is Just to Say.
Poetry springs forth from authentic human voice.
Poetry is about anarchy. It's about mystery. It's about dreams. It's about, you know, the unknown.
Writing is a way of saying that you and the world have a chance.
This is Amy Nazouk Matatil, and I'm reading a poem called Self-Portrait as C-Section Scar. When I'm happy, I can smile twice at the same time. So thin, a marker tip line with a waxy shine, a vein of maple leaf, a dog's upper lip, arm of an enemy. Of all the magical plants and animals in the sea, the hagfish is the most unpopular, the most horrifying, the one that makes children burst into tears. And if that isn't enough, she is the only fish without vertebrae, so she could literally tie herself into a knot to bulge out and pop the small mouths of fish that dare try to eat her. Don't you admire her clever slip and wriggle? Don't you think her nerves are left a little more electric after she is caught? Sometimes if you put an ear to the dark slash between my hip bones, you can hear a soft hum. Pretend it's a skit of bees in late spring.
What I love about this poem as someone who has gone through that experience is that I think a lot of times there's this sort of sense that, like, there is a natural way to have a baby, and if you have a C-section, there you just sort of have not, like, lived up to what is expected of you in the animal and natural world, right?
Oh my
There's this sense in this poem that you kind of, like, reclaim the C-section scar, like you take it back to the ocean where we all began, as you know. I just love that sense that you make it something that is profoundly natural and celebrated as such.
Oh, thank you. That is, like, the best thing. Oh, this book is still so brand new. I'm holding just the one copy in my hand, but honestly, that is, like, one of the sweetest things. You just hit it on the head. There was some mothers, actually, who you would think would know better. They've been the ones who've kind of actually directly said, like, oh, you had a C-section, how monstrous. That was the word, monstrous. Mm. And so, like, as if anybody, or at least certainly I didn't, and I'm guessing you weren't either, but nobody goes around as a little girl thinking, I can't wait to have a C-section. You know what I mean? Like I would not be talking to you if I didn't have it. So I, for the longest time, was just so, I just kept pondering that word coming from another mother, that the way I gave birth was monstrous. So absolutely, I just remember thinking, I'll show you what kind of monster this is. And this is the one of the most incredible monsters who could go through this not once, but twice, you know? So thank you. On a personal note, I know it's definitely the speaker and all that kind of thing, but I really wanted to kind of capture that. Yeah, it's just like what you said, that showing that there is strength no matter how you give birth. It's just one of the most amazing actions on the planet, you know. So, and same with the hagfish. No one's going to buy a stuffed hagfish to give to their daughter or son. But I just think the hagfish is also a pretty wondrous animal.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love this poem. I really do. And I love what you said. I love also this sense of, like, I wouldn't be talking to you if this medical intervention hadn't been available.
Yes, seriously. Yeah. I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to be melodramatic. That is the actual truth. And so it just was like, I just wanted to, you know, and also too, I think you probably encountered this as well. There's not really a whole lot of poems that feature a C-section period. And then if they do, they're not really praised, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, there's just nothing that, in the same way that, like, oh, I am just Earth Goddess Mother who did everything naturally. You know what I mean?
Yeah, my body opened. And stuff like that. I'm thinking also of, like, that the Kevin Young poem, Crowning, right? That's probably the poem that most people think of when they think of a birth poem, which is, you know,
Which is gorgeous in its own way.
Yes.
But I wanted to kind of put my own stamp on that.
I love that. And now we need to hear the poem about, like, you know, for the woman who was not able to breastfeed because...
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
There's this notion that, like, there is no such a thing as a woman who cannot breastfeed. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just all those kinds of statements. It's just so fun. It is absolutely... I'm not even angry anymore. I'm just so bemused that another woman... And I've never heard them from a man. But it's always another woman who just makes these grand statements about other women's bodies. Like, it would never occur to me, even if I was single and never had children, it would never occur to me to comment on what another woman's body can or should not or can't, should be able to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just, I guess, expect more from other women, you know? I mean, we have the same body most, you know, so anyway, I'm speaking to the choir here, I know.
Yeah, no. I would love to talk a little bit more. I mean, of course, I have not seen your new book, but I know a lot of your work, and I'm just interested in, could you talk a little bit about how your poems begin? And I get the sense that your natural predisposition as a poet is to go back to the natural world. And I wonder if it has always been thus, or if that is something that you feel like you have acquired or cultivated as a reader or writer of poems. I just wonder, I'm so curious to know how your poems begin.
Good question. Thank you. You know, I've always been so jealous of poets who have projects, you know, mm-hmm. like things like I'm doing, you know, a chapbook on the history of the violin or something like that. So every day they get up and have a violin poem to write or something, mm-hmm. you know. I almost in some ways wish that I could do that. I've tried and it just never happens. It's almost the opposite. If I think, oh, I'm going to write about a violin, it ends up being something completely different. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's just really always been the same way, where I start with one image. And really within the last maybe decade, the images I started out with were just kind of what I've observed around me. But really in the last decade, I've noticed, it's not even really a conscious thing, but I've noticed they definitely are taken from the outside, from the natural world. I'm realizing now that I'm talking about the book more than I have in the last 5 years. It's like I forget kind of you go through these moments of being in the public eye and then not in the public eye and then public eye. Mm-hmm. So one of my guilty pleasures is that I actually read more natural history and more science and nature books than I do poetry. Mm-hmm. And I read a lot of poetry. Mm-hmm. So that just to put in perspective, I read a lot of nature books. So... I think my poems just really always start with this image that I just can't get out of. I'm never consciously making notes. I'm never reading a book on octopus and jotting notes down next to me. It's just whatever images kind of stay with me or haunt me or tug in my lungs, I start kind of just writing about that, never with the purpose of today I'm going to write about an octopus. Mm-hmm. But I find that starting with that image will lead me to some painful memory with my mother being strict with me or something. And then that would lead me something to my own child or, you know, to a first love or to a hapless crush or something like that. But it's almost always not really starting where it doesn't, it rarely finishes with that image. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, just yesterday, I was looking at something on the history of sword swallowing, and I know what I'm writing has nothing to do with sword swallowing, but I was just trying to figure out the muscles in the neck. So it's more of kind of exploration through images that haunt me.
I love that. I think that's going to sound very familiar to most poets, or you know,
okay.
Maybe not to most readers of poetry, because I do think that readers of poetry have this sort of sense that we sit down and this is what I'm going to write about, and this is going to be the poem that comes out of it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That sort of, you know, really, it's just grasping in the dark.
It really
and
is.
Your dark seems to kind of be, you know, more the dark of the ocean or the dark of the, you know, the natural world. But that seems mm-hmm. very, that rings very true to me as a poet. So what brought you to write poetry? How did you start and what brought you to it?
So what I started actually, and I think, you know, I could go on and on about this, but in a nutshell, I am a failed chemistry major. And one day I can actually point to a day where I was just procrastinating from an organic chemistry lab. And I quite literally found on the table next to me, because that's how like much I wanted to avoid my lab, it was a poem, a prose poem by Naomi Shihab Nye. And I had never seen anything like it before. It's the poem called Mint Snowball. Mm-hmm. And like, I was just, it was like that, it really was that Emily Dickinson thing. I felt like the top of my head was taken off. Mm. I tacked it up on my dorm bulletin board. Whose handout is this? Please see Amy in room, you know, 324. The guy down the hall who needed it, that was his worksheet, his handout. He was like, hi, I need this. This is my homework. Also, it's called a poem. You know, like mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was. And I followed into class, asked that professor to if I could just sit in that next week, maybe within the next 2 weeks. I switched out from, it's so overwhelming, but I switched out from chemistry to English because of that poem.
Wow.
So I've told Naomi this and she's like, oh, stop it. That's not true. I said, it is absolutely true. And you can ask any one of my dorm mates because they all thought I was cuckoo Cocoa Puffs crazy. So yeah, and the rest is, so fast forward, my first job ever, when the dean said you could invite any, we haven't had a poet in years, you can invite one poet, who's it going to be? I mean, there was no question. It was Naomi. So she was my very first poet I ever hosted when I had a job.
That's wonderful. She was our first guest on this show.
That's right. Yeah, I remember. So, yeah, yes, yeah. I know you have a special
common.
Affinity.
Yeah,
exactly.
So listen.
She's so great.
So Amy, I asked you to bring in a poem that you wanted to share with the world, something that you, like, you know, I, as a poet, really love sharing poems, you know? It's like one of the great joys of loving poetry.
Oh, yeah.
Is sharing it with others. So can you read us a poem?
Sure thing. And this one that I chose is from a debut poet. Mm. Her name is Jenny George. And her book is just out with Copper Canyon. It's called The Dream of Reason.
Hmm.
And this is actually in the newest edition of Copper Nickel, but it's a poem called Eclipse. And this is by Jenny George. Eclipse. All the birds are ill. They flood the elms, driven to roost by a noontime dusk. The trees are full of eyes. One body blots out another body. Isn't that how it works? She died. It floats on my vision like a burn, hands folded like a bride. Dark cave of the mouth open, as if a great sound were being drawn in. We were very tired. We covered her in flowers as she cooled. The crescent of her foot hung off the bed. Now the birds are quelled, disturbed, and quiet. A strange hour of silk descends. They settle in the trees, if not to sleep, then to obey the dark.
Oh, what a poem. Jenny
yeah,
George.
Her whole book is like this. Jenny George. Do you have this book? If you don't, you need to get it immediately. It is one of my favorites from the spring. It's every poem is just so, it's just so intense and so beautiful all at the same time. Yeah.
I love the way that it seems to also be making reference tonally and also almost like those birds. I feel like the poem After Great Pain, A Formal Feeling Comes, that Emily Dickinson poem, the sort of about
yes.
the aftermath of, you know, right? She says something like the nerves sit ceremoniously or the nerves sit ceremonious like tombs. It's just like those birds, you know, the sort of way that in the wake of grief, the world seems so strange and still and, oh, man.
Yeah, it's just the last I've just been sitting in with her book lately, and the last like ends, the last few lines of each of her poems are just like that. So it's like one of those books you just need to sit with and just relish each page, each ending in particular.
Mm-hmm. Could you read the last sentence again? Or the last line? The last line?
Sure. Let me see. Maybe like the last two. I guess it goes together. A strange hour of silk descends. They settle in the trees, if not to sleep, then to obey the dark.
Oh, man.
Yeah, right? Like it's, when you said, you know, choose you left it pretty wide open, but choose a poem from another poet. I was like, oh, it has to be Jenny George. I have to just share this book with the world.
That's great. And so generous of you to bring in a debut poet. And I hope everyone goes out and buys this poem, this book of poems. I know I will be.
Yes.
Okay, Amy, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Alrighty, take care.
Take care. Bye. You can find Self-Portrait as C-Section Scar and other wonderful poems in Amy Nezuko Matottle's forthcoming collection, Oceanic, out soon from Copper Canyon Press. This is Just to Say is produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. I'm Carrie Fountain. Thank you for listening.